Well, good afternoon. Greetings again. The beloved name of Jesus, the perfect example of love and the perfect example of reverence. I trust that the Spirit of the Lord will be gracious to us and anoint our service together. And not only for these moments, but to have an impact upon our lives on how we live in the future. Our brother mentioned possible challenge for people Sunday afternoon. I don't belong to the sleeping preacher church, and I don't belong to the sleepy people church either. I'm not used to preaching to people that are sleeping, and I have ways of helping that. If I don't know you well enough for sure, if I can take that liberty, but if you feel it coming on, you can just stand for a couple minutes, and the rest of us will pray for you, and you won't be sleeping. Now, my stepmother had a recipe that was much calmer than that, and she said if she feels she's getting sleepy, she just raises her feet off the floor about 2 inches and just hold them there. And she said that works every time. So if it's your desire, now I only noticed one person sleeping this morning, and that was the teenager, and maybe he had reasons to sleep, and maybe when I talk to the women, he'll sleep again, but I'll do my best to do my part, and you do your best to do your part, and the Lord will bless our efforts together. Subject is announced, this matter of fostering godly homes is lighting the flame through reverence. Now this morning, we referred to the book of Ephesians chapter 5, and there's only one verse there that we're going to look at that we already. The title would be taken from this verse. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. In this passage of Scripture, there are actually four words that fit together beautifully as couplets, and that is, the husband is to lead and to love, and the wife is to obey and reverence. That's a beautiful combination. And where there are husbands that really lead and love, that makes obedience and reverence much easier. Over probably 60 years ago, I was at a funeral in Washington County, and Irvin Schenck had the message, and he made a statement that arrested my attention. And that was this, that love makes obedience easy and duty delightful. That left an impact upon me that my wife and I talked about that way home, and we got a lady to paint that on a plaque. It hangs on our wall today yet. Love makes obedience easy and duty delightful. Now the word reverence actually comes from the word phobia, which we get the word phobia from. And phobia is often considered a very negative thing. People have phobias of height or phobias of flying. I have a neighbor that's a truck driver, and he occasionally was supposed to go down to Eastern Shore, Maryland, and go across the Bay Bridge. And he's been driving truck for years, but he has a phobia. He said he cannot drive across that bridge. He just will not truck anymore. He said he just all gets nervous and shake, and he can't even control the truck. Now, that seems strange to me, but that's what a phobia is. Now, this is not that kind of a phobia. This kind of phobia is the word for reverence, to be in awe and to revere. It's the kind of reverence that is spoken of as the fear of God. It's not this fearful thing that God is carrying a big stick and going to club me with it, but it's a holy reverence, a fear, not wanting to offend him in any way. That's a reverence for God, not wanting to offend him. That's the word that's used here. It's a deep respect for someone or something. Synonyms are high esteem, high regard, great respect, acclaim, admiration, appreciation, favor, estimation. Now there's four areas that I'd like to address originally here. Four areas of our wives showing respect. And then I have 10 practical ideas on how a wife can reverence her husband. The first one is to reverence his leadership. 1 Corinthians 11:3, I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, the head of Christ is God. And so God is the one who decided this. God is the one who placed man in the leader. And so reverence his leadership. Ephesians 5:22 says, wives, submit yourselves, your husbands, unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. He's the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Nevertheless, let one of you, every one of you in particular, so love his wife, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Appreciated the direction or thoughts our brother in our devotional meditation. And it speaks there about the church as a building. Bible also speaks of the church as a bride. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The greatest privilege that any mortal has, bar none, the greatest privilege that any person, any mortal have, is to be a part of the Church of Jesus Christ, bar none. That's the greatest privilege. Think of all the things that you might think of. There's nothing compares to that privilege. And so as we think of Christ as the head of the church, and he has placed the home, the husband, to be the head. And so, wives, this morning, this afternoon, God gave your husband to be the leader in your home. This means he's a spiritual leader. This means he's the one that basically responsible to make the decisions in life. You're like a resource person. You give him ideas, give him thoughts. How should I say this? Sometimes I'm not a great big fan of committee meetings because I'm a get or done kind of person. And sometimes committees take so long, and so I have to discipline myself. But I have just learned by listening to other people, like in a board, and we have this issue up. And so this person says this, this person says that. And I had my opinions before, but after I considered what this person says, that altered my opinion, see. And likewise in the home, as the wife and the husband sit down and discuss issues, the wife often brings to fore things that we never thought about and help us to make the right decision. You know, wives have a special sense of intuition that we just don't have. I noticed already, in church life, my wife would say, Richard, are you aware that so-and-so is really struggling? And I'd say, no, I didn't have any idea. She said, maybe you ought to go talk to him. Say. And so wives have intuitive powers somehow. Wives have intuitive powers. And those intuitive powers are a blessing. Not that you make the decisions, but it gives us an awareness. And so your part of the decision-making process is to help him. He makes the decisions, and you just can help to provide the information. And let him take responsibility. Reverence his leadership. Let him take responsibility. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to make some very stupid decisions. But don't sit there and say, I told you so. Say. He's going to make mistakes. He knows he's going to make mistakes. But reverence his leadership. God placed him there. He is your personal spiritual leader. See, the pastors are the spiritual leaders to the flock. But you have a personal spiritual leader. Isn't it something in the New Testament talks about if any woman have a question, let him ask her husband at home? What does that mean? See, he's counting on the person, the father, the husband, to be a spiritual man, a leadership, has direction, has decision and vision we talked about this morning, and he needs to be that kind of a person. And blessed be the wife that has that kind of a person. I referred to the marriage vow this morning. Honoring his leadership, reverence his leadership, puts to practice some of the admonitions that we made in our marriage vow. I'm taking you back to your wedding day again and again. Part of the marriage vow that I use tells the bride, in your love and life lies his inspiration and help in life. In you, he needs to find encouragement, cheerfulness, confidence. May you, with understanding, love, and devotion, help him make the contributions a dedicated husband can make. And so reverence his leadership. Secondly, reverence his provision. We'll notice way back in Genesis already, after the fall, unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed be the ground for thy sake, in sorrow shalt thou eat it all the days of thy life. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken. Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. In 1 Timothy 5:18, 5:8, said, but if any man provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Reverence his provision. This is a principle that's often overlooked in our world today. It is amazing in how many homes that today there are two incomes, husband and wife both working. Now the Bible talks about teachers, wives being keepers at home. The economic situation in our time, with the standard of living that we have in America, that we have fallen into, the level of living, they used to call it living high in the hog, I don't know what that means anymore. But requires that the man often cannot make enough of money to live, and so both have to work. And the divorce rate increases tremendously when the wife works out of the home. And there's a tendency among us, see, I understand I'm the antique here. And I grew up in a poor family. I'm a child of the Depression. The Great Depression. We've had many depressions. The Great One, see. And we grew up knowing what it was to be poor. We didn't know we were poor because everybody was poor. My parents didn't even have money enough to buy a ball for me to play with. So we took the strings off a feed bag and wrapped them tight and put friction tape around. That was our ball. We didn't have a bat. We'd go out the wood pound, take a 1x6 and cut a little handle on it. See. Well, now to play ball, we have to have special sneakers and we have to have special gloves to wear to hold the bat. We have to have whatever. See. I mean, I remember what it was like to be able to get a ball glove. I thought if a boy had a ball glove, that's all you could ever want in the world. I mean, that was it. And I'd page through the Sears Roebuck catalog and I'd look at all these ball gloves. Oh, if I can only have a ball glove. And finally, my father left me order one. $3.29 for a ball glove. See? And I just had everything a boy wanted. See, I'm not asking you to relate to that, but our standard of living has just increased and increased and increased. And I'm thinking we better get ready. So you have these five steps. Those who study economics tell me that you have every generation increasing. For about three or four generations, And then that generation don't appreciate what was done. And he said about five generations, they end up back where the first one started. See. And because of our standard of living, I'm saying, wives, reverence your husband's provision. You may not, there's going to be different levels of financial ability in a church. Some are going to have more than others. But never, never mention to your husband that you wish he could make more money. Reverence his provision. What God provides for him, for his lifestyle, his work, whatever, that be satisfied with that in reverence, the provision that he made to not appreciate deeply all that he's done. Even though your lifestyle may not be as high as some others. But reverence his provision. It's a biblical principle. Whatever he's able to provide. So reverence the place that God has placed him in you, in your level, whatever it is. And I think maybe as the church, in the situation that our nation is in, we may have prepared ourselves to lower our standard of living. Does a family with five children need 7 cell phones? How many cars does it take? You know, how many cars can you drive at once? See. But I'm just saying, we just become used to everything getting better and having more things. And to the pressures of finance. Finances bring a tremendous amount of pressure in a marriage. And back to the men, whatever, in your but you see undue amounts of debt that puts pressure that the husband is so bent and driven. You know, he talk about, you know, he has to have 2 jobs. He burns the candle at both ends, and then he prays for more wax. You see, when that kind of thing, he doesn't really have time to focus on a relationship with his wife, and she gets neglected, and he's out here working on finances. And especially finances for things that, you know, just to keep a standard of living with the Joneses. Someone said, you know, the rat race is over. Yeah, the rat's won. So don't get involved in comparing yourself with other families. Reverence his provision. Thirdly, reverence his manliness. God created him to be a man. And he created you to be a woman. Reverence his manliness. God made man and he looked at it and said, that's enough of them. We're going to make a woman, see. But he made one or the other. Read Genesis 2:18. The Lord God said, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make a helpmeet for him. 1 Corinthians 11:9. Neither was man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. A verse that I referred to earlier, 1 Peter 3:7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor to the weaker vessel, unto the wife as the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. I know this is a mixed audience, and I'll try to use discretion. But one of the things that I hear wives say, if it gets to the worst marriage counseling, is my husband doesn't understand me. And I hear men say, my wife doesn't understand me. And to understand that reverence his manliness. Accept the fact that God has made him to be the stronger. And God has made him, and God bless the marriage where the man understands his wife as a weaker vessel. I'm not sure I should say much about birth control. But we have to be careful that we don't adopt the world's thinking, the world's mentality. God said, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. And I know there's some families that can't have any children. I understand that. And my heart goes out to them. And I'm mindful of that. According to that verse, the family has to have at least four. If you're going to replace yourself, that takes two. If you're going to multiply, that still takes two. So that takes four. At the same time, I say this very carefully, I don't think it's necessary for a husband and wife to have all the children that it's biologically possible to have. And there's where health needs to come in. A man needs to be very, very sensitive to his wife's condition. I know of situations where the mother had a child every year, 15 months, and she looked like death on wheels after about 15. Brethren, and I'm new here, maybe I'll get tarred and feathered, but we live in a world that's very immoral. Women dress tremendously immodest. You see it every day. And when you come home, your wife needs to be seen more than just a sex object. Am I connecting? Understand what I'm saying? If that's what you do, your prayers are going to be hindered. That's what it means when it says, as heirs together of the grace of life, together. This is one of the most sacred things that God's given a husband and wife, this powers of procreation. To understand that as a gift from God, and that you will give an account someday to God what you've done with that gift. That relationship needs to be entered into very, very carefully and prayerfully as God directs. Reverence his manliness. Fourthly, reverence his reputation. The Bible is full of this kind of concept. Proverbs 12:4, a virtuous woman is the crown to her husband, but let she that maketh ashamed as rottenness in his bones. Proverbs 31:11, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of the spoil. She shall do him good all the days of his life. Romans 14:19, let us follow after things that make for peace, and the things whereby we may edify one another. Reverence his reputation. Don't embarrass him in front of others. If there's some area of his life that needs help, tell him that alone. Not your best friends, not your sister. Don't embarrass him. Reverence his position. Notice Proverbs said, a virtuous woman, the crown to her husband, but she maketh ashamed as rottenness in his bones. You know, there's none of us that are perfect. Men, no women. We all have room for growth. We all have room for improvement. But don't air that in public, embarrassing. One of my pet peeves is preachers that get up and tell us what a wonderful wife they have, that she's the best woman in all the world. We knew that before he ever got up there. He might have a good wife, see? How does he know it's the best one in the world if it's the only one he ever had? How does he know that? And so the preacher's bragging on their wives. That just kind of bugs me, see? In reverence his reputation, compliment him. Now, don't flatter him. See, flattery the motive of flattery is really selfishness, that I get something because I flatter this person, he'll do me some good. But an honest compliment, as our brother was reading from Ephesians, it's amazing how things click in your mind, go back in memory. Yeah, my memory goes back to 60, a couple years ago, right here in Marion. I was a senior in high school, and I was the president of my class, and every year they had a junior-senior prom where the president of the class is supposed to crown the queen in the junior class. And I said, I won't be there. I can't do that. And I told the vice president, he's going to have to do it. And he was a Christian, too. He was a Methodist, but he was the only two Christians in our class. And I told him, he's going to have to do it. He said, I can't do it either. I said, somebody's going to do it. I'm not going to. And so he and I got up and came over here to Marion somewhere to George Monk's tent meetings. Somewhere here in Marion, there was a tent. And I know there's lots of different feelings about that, but that's where we go. And George preached on Ephesians chapter 2, and I still remember what he said. He said, Ephesians tells us what we were by nature, what we are by grace, what we shall be in glory, and how the change takes place. Now, my wife is not perfect, but I won't tell you what it is. See? And she knows I'm far from perfect. But I'm convinced she's not telling everybody else about it. See, we're in this together to build each other and encourage character development. But don't embarrass him in public. All right, 10 practical areas of showing deference. How does a wife show biblical reverence to her husband? Well, some of these I've already just alluded to a little bit, and that is look for opportunities to show your husband honor and build him up. Look for opportunities. Everybody responds to gratitude and appreciation. You employers know that. If you express appreciation, you know, I have my farm rented to a family, a man, and you know, he's just always grateful. I help him all I can. I told him I don't want paid, I just voluntary service. And he's just so grateful for everything you do for him. You know, when somebody's grateful, it's amazing what they can draw out of you. And so look for opportunities to show your husband appreciation, gratitude. When's the last time you thanked him for working, for providing the groceries, providing the house, whatever, family needs? When's the last time you really thanked him for going out and doing that? See, honey attracts more flies than what vinegar does. And a grateful spirit, gratitude. Verbally express it. For some of the harder things, for instance, in disciplining the children. Now, there's a certain amount of that happens at home. I'm assuming the father's working. There's some things they need to take care of. Don't leave everything for when he comes home. My father delivered eggs to Washington for many years on a Friday. Every Friday he'd go to Washington with eggs, and then we were home. And I had two brothers, and there wasn't much that we couldn't get into. But all she had to say was, boys, I'm going to have to tell Father when he comes home. I mean, there's nothing to straighten us up quick. We didn't want that to happen. See. But they shared a beautiful relationship. She didn't let things go. Just let it go when he wasn't there. Because if all the children have to look forward to when the father comes home is what they're going to face, it's pretty negative. But at the same time, the father needs to be responsible, especially when he comes home, to take up the reins and take that load off of his wife. But verbally express. I guess I can't stress that. There's way too much in our marriage relationship we just take for granted, and do not express even what's in your heart. but just express it. Gratitude, thanksgiving. Number two, accept the fact that you married an imperfect man. He that hath begun a good work in you will finish it. Remember, we are all a work in progress. Your husband is a work in progress. You are a work in progress. And so, accept the fact that it's not a perfect person, but God is still wants to develop in life. Number three, focus on what your person does well. Ask God to give you an attitude that looks for the best in your husband. I mentioned earlier, in dating, we often focus on the positive. And then after some years of marriage, there's the tendency to focus on the negative. So as you begin each day, ask yourself, is my heart in the right place? Am I following the humble example of Jesus Christ, counting my husband's needs more significant than my own? Philippians 2:1-4. Number four, I already alluded to, I just mentioned it again. Speak well of your husband. Don't belittle him to your friends or make him feel he's unnecessary or incapable. Encourage, number five, encourage your husband when he gives spiritual direction to the family. Affirm his efforts, no matter how small. I mentioned this morning, but I'd like to stress it again now. In reverencing him in the spiritual direction he gives, God has called the husband to lead. And some are better at this than others. But where there's a lack of leadership, the wife, there's actually a role reversal takes place. I'm not sure if women are born to be overbearing, or what's the word I want, brethren? For when a woman takes charge, missed me. What's the word I want? You don't know. Well, if I don't know, you don't know. Well, none of us know. But overbearing, see, to take the place of leadership. She feels a vacuum. She feels the children are not getting the direction they need. She steps up to the plate. That makes him feel inferior, so he becomes more passive because he feels he can't do it right. But what he does do right, encourage him. And if you encourage him, that'll develop his leadership skills. And the more he leads, the more you honor him, the more he'll lead. Tell him he's doing a good job. Thank him for it. That'll encourage him to be a better leader. And so encourage him in the spiritual direction he takes. You can do that by asking his advice, involving your husband's decisions. So respect his opinions and decision-making skills. Number six is closely related to that, and that is compliment, but do not flatter. Someone has said, don't let 2 days pass without expressing appreciation for at least one thing your husband has said and done in the last 48 hours. They do not flatter. I heard of a young couple who weren't married long, and his wife was just excited about their marriage and was telling everybody that she married the model husband. I've got such a model husband, over and over. And he heard it so often, he thought, well, maybe I better get the dictionary and see what model means. And he looked it up. It said, an imitation of the real thing. That's what flattery does. Part of this is to tell your children of your husband's, to honor him, of his strengths, of his character strength, both as a husband and a father. My mother died when your children were all home yet. I was 18 years old. My parents had a beautiful relationship. I never heard my mother say one negative word about my father. Always held him in high regard. I never heard one harsh word between them. Never. I do remember one time I said my father was delivering eggs in Washington. He would leave at 4 a.m, get home by 8 o'clock, and so she was in charge of the farm. We had eggs to gather, we had cows to milk, and she did it all while he was gone. We were around the supper table at 8 o'clock one night just after he got home, talking about the affairs of the day. And she mentioned something about a door was left open and some of the chickens got out. And I'm not sure what all was said, except analyzing a situation, apparently she hadn't shut the door. And she said, well, at least you could have shut the door. And after a while, I saw a tear come out of my mother's eye. She got up and left the table, I guess wiped her tears, came back and sat down. That is the only time. See. Wives, if you build respect for your husband, your children will have respect for him too. Honor him. Now there's also ways to express gratitude non-verbally. Someone has said, I read this somewhere, that in marital communications, verbal communications accounts for only 7% of total communication between husband and wife. The rest is comprised by tone of voice, 38%, and facial expressions and body movements, 55% of what's communicated. I remember attending a minister's meeting where Truman Brunk, who was the bishop of Denby, Virginia, told us an illustration where impacted his life. He had a young man that wasn't doing well, and he asked him to come for an interview, and he was there for several hours. And finally, the wife was there for a while, then she went to bed. And so finally the young man went home, and Truman went to go to bed, and his wife was still awake. And he said to his wife, well, how do you think I handled the situation? And she said, Truman, I never heard the gospel given in such devilish tones. He said, one of the greatest lickings I ever got. See. And so it matters not only what we say, but how we say it. See, some of us... I'm a person that can't hide my feelings. I can try all I want to. Some years ago, I was at the Brian conference, and it was a Sunday night, and it was full. And he had all the preachers come up and sit on 40, 50 preachers up on the stage. Had a young man who was attending our church just not long, sitting clear at the back, and he had one of his friends from Lancaster County with him. And he looked up there and he said, one of those preachers up there is not agreeing with what's being said. And he pointed out which one. Oh, he said, that's my pastor. And the man was preaching on the devotional covering, and there were some ladies in the audience that weren't covered, and he was so apologetic in his message that he could, none of us knew whether he believed it himself or not. See. And so some people can hide their feelings. I'm not one of them people. My wife can read my body language. I just can't hide it. But remember, tone of voice and body language are all part of our expression. Part of that also is show reverence, give your husband undivided attention in conversation. And I'm talking about making eye contact. My wife and I don't go out and eat very often, but we did here some time ago, and there was a, sitting at a restaurant, a farmer that I know came in with his wife, sat down in a booth over there. He sat down, he had a ball cap on, had it pulled down, you could already see out of his eyes. He sat there and ate his meal, and she sat there, and I don't think they looked at each other. I don't think they said one word to each other. I've conducted a number of weddings, and having practice for the wedding, and the bridal party comes, you know, and there's decisions to be made, and I see this bridegroom there, he's trying to make decisions and help, and she's standing there and she's just gazing into his face. Oh, when's the last time you gazed into his face and just admired him? See, you'd be surprised what that'll do for your marriage. Eye contact. You know, there's something about eye contact. You talk to a person that has a guilty conscience, and they can already look at you, right? There's something about eye contact. That's important. Understand the importance. Well, this one is, some of these overlap. Think before you speak. Sometimes life decisions are really hard, and especially areas where men and women think and reason differently. Proverbs 21:23 says, "Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from trouble." Now, some people, when they're under stress, they can't stop talking. Others of us, when I'm under stress, I have a tendency to clam up. I just won't talk. We had a lot of stress already in our lives. A number of years ago, we had a disastrous barn fire. In fact, lost three barns on a windy day. I was at the Brian conference, and I got a phone call. You need to get home, your barn's on fire. So it was already gone. A lot of people there, fire trucks were still there. I walked in there and looked around. And a brother walked up to me and said, "Richard, God's trying to tell you something." He said, "Don't you build back." He said, "God took it away. Don't you build back. God's trying to tell you something." I just listened. I didn't say nothing. Okay. Next morning, another brother came and said, the first man said, "The Lord burned it down." Second man comes and says, "The devil burned it down." And I said, "Don't get discouraged." He said, "We'll come in here and clean up. We'll help you. We'll get you back in business." So one says the Lord did it, the other says the devil did it. And I don't know to this day who did it. But I know the Lord allowed it, see. But, you know, when we're given to the... Someone has said there's three T's when you speak. We already talked about it. The text, what you say, the time, when is the right time to say it. And the third is the tone. Text, time, and tone. Tone of voice. I had a lot to work on this in our marriage. You know, in raising a family, my wife would say, "Richard, are you aware what that sounded like?" Say. You know, when something, you know, when you got children and you're on a farm and things happen and, you know, somebody ran a tractor into the corner of the building and, you know, I want to know why. You know, my wife said, "Don't ask so many questions, just fix it." See? Number 9, or is this number 10? I'm not sure. No, this is number 9. And this is an important one, too. I don't have these in any order of importance, but wives, to reverence your husband, take an interest, take a keen interest in your husband's work. what he does. Now, this fits the other side of the house, too. But he goes out there, he works all day, he faces challenges, he faces decisions, he faces reversals, whatever he faces in making a living. But take an interest. How did the day go? What about this? Take opportunity. I know that our vocations vary a lot, but of course, we farmed. But if I needed to go to town for something, there's nothing that just pleased me more than for her to be willing to get in a pickup and go along. Just go along. That's all. Just to be with me. Take an interest. She likes to sew. I mean, you know, I told this sewing machine man today, he just bought a new sewing machine from them, and I said, that's causing some stress, because she likes that thing so much, she'd sooner do that than anything else. And even last night, you know, I was longing for some time together, and she was back there sewing. See? And so I said, if I go out to the fire pit and make a fire, and would you have time to come and sit out there? Yeah, she said, I'll do that. See? So we roasted by the fire. But I think the older we get, the more we just appreciate time together. And with all the stresses, especially in raising a family, you got three or four children, you got to take time to pay attention to his work and what he does. Involve yourself in his life. And he needs to involve yourself in your life. Show interest in your husband's work. Support him in his struggles. The last one I have here is to reverence your husband is to keep the children in control in your husband's absence. I'm supposing he's the man that has a desire to see his children walk in obedience and to be faithful children. And he has guidelines. But when his absence, support him 100%. Reverence him by showing support and keeping the children in control. There's times, of course, when if there's a problem there, he needs to step up to the plate. But for husband and wife to pull together in how we're going to discipline, what the guidelines are, what's acceptable conduct, and what's not acceptable. You know, one of the beautiful things about a Christian home, and it's so important in our day, opportunity, is a family that has their children well disciplined. We are now living in a generation that was never disciplined, and now they're having children. And chaotic conditions. And when you're in public and you have children, now children are going to be children, okay? And the home, you know, needs to look like it's lived in. But it don't need to look like a tornado just hit it. You know, when the man comes home, it's nice to have some things in order, see? And so she looks well to the way of her house, but show reverence to him by keeping a house that, I'm not saying picture perfect, I'm not talking about that. You know what I mean by house that's lived in. But a testimony, when people see a family that's well ordered, and they say, what a beautiful family you have. You maybe go shopping, take the family along and the children. You know, it's not like the situation I read about where this man took his son to the grocery store. And this son was just out of control. He was grabbing things off the shelf, and his father getting him put them back, and he'd grab something else, and he made to put it back. He lay down the floor and screamed, and it was just an ugly sight. And this happened from one aisle to the next, and there was a lady following him and heard this man that whenever he'd try to calm things down, he'd say, now, Albert, calm down. Calm down, Albert. And they go down the next aisle in another episode, and he'd say, Albert, calm down. Calm down. This happened aisle after aisle. They finally got the checkout counter. And the lady said to this man, sir, she said, I just want to compliment you on how patient you've been with Albert. He said, lady, I'm Albert. Now you see that disaster played out again and again and again. You ever been shopping and wish you could just do something about that? You ever been shopping? heads shaking all over the place. What a beautiful thing. A godly home, fostering godly homes where there's children that know what no means, that are taught to obey. What a testimony of for God that we can have. Lord bless you, ladies, your wives. Jesus was the perfect example of love and the perfect example of reverence. He said, I do always those things that please the Father. What a beautiful example. Lord bless you.